Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast, wrapping up from WGC Mexico, Chapultepec. Gentlemen, what are your biggest takeaways from the week?
Shout out to my hitters at Grupo Salinas.
They put on another great event.
That might be the way to do it. Not put your name on the event and then just hammer home every single commercial break with your commercials. Yeah.
The Grupo Salinas.
It should be the Mexican Open.
I agree. I think we should just call it the Mexican Open.
I think Club Pro guys got rights on all of that. So that might be why. But.
Ups to Justin Huber, former Mexican Open champion. Exactly. Right? Friend of the pod.
More coming on that front.
Yeah.
DJ ran away and hid. We're going to break down a lot from this event, starting with DJ. Then we're going to talk Rory. We're going to talk Tiger. We're going to talk about the golf course, the coverage, Spieth, Bryson, a lot of things first. But
and we've got listener voicemails.
We do.
First time ever. Hope it all works.
Hope it all works. We got a big electronic thing going on over here. We're kind of relying on DJ the DJ over here tonight. Hope it all goes to plan. But I don't think there's a ton to cover with DJ in that. I know I've made it clear how much I hate the whose A game is best. I think we can kind of put it to bed. Yeah, I think it's got to be DJ, right? All right, here we go. Say it.
He's the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, period, point blank.
He is. I mean, he's won, what, 13 years in a row? 13 seasons in a row?
So I have a little stack. Go ahead.
Hold on. I'm here too, by the way. I think if we accept the take that he's the greatest player of all time, we have to also accept the take that he's the biggest underachiever of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Tron and I are shaking hands.
We're straight there, mate.
Okay. Yeah. All
right. Can you explain the greatest player of all time take for anyone who's never heard it?
Yeah, it's
because it's not as straightforward as it sounds.
Well, no, but it's not very convoluted either. Maybe it's a one-hole stretch, maybe it's a three-hole stretch, but he is the greatest player to ever play the game.
Over that period of time. Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about a 72-hole tournament. I'm not talking about over a career. I'm just talking about, like, he's the greatest player to ever pick up a golf club.
Yeah.
Like, his ceiling is higher than anybody's ever even fathomed.
I used to think you were like messing with everyone. The more I watch, I'm like, okay, now I kind of understand what he's saying. Like
he didn't even putt well this
he's
week.
Not achieved the most, not even close, not even like remotely close, but no one's ever held more physical capabilities in golf.
Did he really not putt well?
Yeah,
God, I felt like every time
I might have to fact check
him.
He led the field in putting this week.
Yeah, he was number one in strokes gained putting.
Listen, guys, I feel like, hey, I know what he's capable of. I felt like he didn't make a lot of putts. He had that putt out of the fringe today that didn't go well.
Well, I think that was self-defense.
Well, that probably didn't count in the strokes gained putting.
Also, he had like a 12-shot lead at that point, so I think he was just nestling it down there.
Is DJ the biggest big game hunter out there that doesn't win
the
majors?
Biggest game hunter.
Let's just flat out say it. With his resume, one major is a bit of a disgrace.
Well, technically two, right? Randy and I were discussing this.
He won
at Whistling Straits. He won like half of it at Chambers Bay, I'd say.
Then he probably won a little bit at Pebble.
He won a tenth at Pebble.
Yeah, so he's got like 2.3, 2.4 majors, depending how you slice it.
So
he maybe got a.
That's
maybe,
why, like today was so disappointing because Rory is probably the biggest big game hunter there is. It's like
he maybe used to be.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he's in another big spot. I'm the biggest Rory, staunchest Rory defender there is, and he. He didn't do anything today.
I mean,
except for try to get a really, really cavalier drop.
He bogeyed the last hole to shoot 31 on the back. I definitely would not say he didn't do anything today.
But he was what? 1 under, 2 under for the day?
4 under on the day.
Oh, okay. Right, listen, TC regrets the error.
TC might have come the most prepared.
Delta lost TC's notebook on the flight over.
Listen to this stretch from November 3rd. 2015 to August 2017. Here's the only events that DJ won. This is not a select amount of events that DJ won. His wins were the WGC HSBC, the WGC Cadillac, the US Open, the WGC Bridgestone, the BMW Championship playoff event, the Genesis at RIV, WGC Mexico, WGC Dell Match Play, and then the Northern Trust, a playoff event. The only non-playoff or WGC or major event that he won was the Genesis.
Are you saying that he has a hard time winning full field events?
It used to be the take
that's
that
a huge knock on him.
Solid, that's yeah. So people might fight you on that one if that's what you're saying.
Well, this was thrown out today. You have a very strong claim on this one, but over under 30 and a half career wins for DJ.
He's at what right now?
20. He's at 20.
20?
This is PGA Tour. We're not counting.
It's so hard. So he's 34 years old.
I think that's an easy over.
Over.
I want to say over as well, but you read so many things about, and maybe Phil is the mega outlier here, but you read so many things about how sharply putting drops off when those guys get into like their late 30s, early 40s. And I don't know. It's really hard. It's one of those things that you look at now and you're like, yeah, if this trend continues forever, like, God, he might pass Phil. And I don't know. He would be a freak if he keeps up this pace for another 10 years, right? I mean, it's... So I don't know.
Let's say he knocks off another two this year.
I was going to say, it seems like he can win 10 in the next 3 years.
He has no no injuries that we know about.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's pretty... I mean, other than
the jet ski thing.
off course injuries.
Yeah.
He's pretty healthy. I see no problem with him basically knocking off two or three a year for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Is that too low of an over under? Should it be like 34 and a half? Because he's won 11 times since the beginning of 2015.
God,
and 11 more wins sounds like a ton, but he's won 11 times in the last four calendar years.
Like, right, he's in the very middle of his peak right now.
Yeah. 34.
I feel like it's a 40 and a half over under.
Oof.
Wow.
Well, then he's coming at your boy, Phil.
Yeah, well, he should. Well, and I was going to say, when you're rattling off his wins during that period, we're so, like, it just doesn't even sound impressive in a post-Tiger world.
That's so wild.
Who cares? Yeah.
Kyle Porter tweeted a statistic today. Through 246 career starts, victories, Dustin Johnson, 20, Phil Mickelson, 19. It's pretty wild.
That's wild, man.
How many victories does Rory have?
12, I think.
I want to say 12. That was the number in my head.
Four
as well.
Majors.
PGA Tour victories.
Yeah. So going back to the Rory take from earlier too, Rory was, he was one over on the day through 10 holes.
Well, once he was...
And then that was at that point, I flipped it over to the Puerto Rico Open.
Which we're going to get to.
I'd like the folks to know that.
Well, once Rory was pronounced dead, hitting that ball in the water on that par five, then he played really well after that, when it kind of didn't really matter anymore.
It's like Rory's the ultimate... It's like too little, too late.
So picture this. These are Dustin's numbers for the week. Picture trying to beat Dustin Johnson when he leads the field in strokes gained putting. He is second in strokes gained approach, and he's seventh in strokes gained off the tee.
He was second in strokes gained tee to green and first in putting. Like, you can't.
Like,
you're not
how
beating
the hell
that.
Are you going to beat it? It's disgusting.
And that's why he won by five.
Yeah. Well, do we have somebody calling in with a question about Rory? I think
we do.
I think I remember that.
We want to get to questions?
Sure. All right. Well, like, if we're going to talk about Rory, I think we should.
This is our first listener voicemail here.
Hi, it's Jeff from Massachusetts. I think the question I have is, when are people going to realize that Rory may be dead, considering how much... I mean, I don't care about the top five finishes. He keeps getting just vaporized in these final groups. And quite frankly, there are so many good players at the top of the world. How am I supposed to believe that he's going to have everything clicking? Could he win more majors? Sure, but I wouldn't be shocked if he ends with where he's at right now, just because of how deep it is. So, when are people going to finally admit that he's dead?
That's some strong verbiage there from our first caller, which we definitely encourage in these voicemails.
It's like Bruce Willis from The Sixth Sense.
When are people going... So I guess, Randy, maybe we'll throw it to you. When are people going to realize that Rory may be dead?
If he doesn't win a major this year, I think we can call it, pronounce it.
Really?
Why?
Because he might be dead.
So Rory's numbers this week, strokes gained off the tee, third. That's
listen,
pretty
I know
good.
You're going to tell me a lot of good
strokes
stats.
Gained approach, 13th.
No, I asked for this.
Strokes gained around the green, 9th. Strokes gained putting, 16th.
So it's fine.
So
it's
Rory, because
on paper, he probably should have finished
DJ
second.
DJ beat the entire field except for Rory by 10 shots.
Yeah.
And then Rory beat the entire field except for DJ by 5 shots.
So, like, if DJ doesn't play this event or has a middle of the road week, we're sitting here wondering, like, celebrating the return of Rory.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Delivered a
you
performance
disagree?
Worthy
well,
of winning.
The problem
that's a
doubt.
Lazy. No, well, that's like, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. Like, it doesn't, you can't, it's the butterfly effect stuff. Like, you can't just remove one guy and be like, Rory would have played the exact same way.
I agree with you. It's hard.
I've heard you argue, like, if Kat wasn't around, like, Phil would have been like the greatest ever.
Well, that's because it's fun.
You can't have it both ways, man.
That's fun.
Okay, well, when talking about a prolonged like 20-year stretch, I think it's a little different than like 1 week. So
that's fair.
But and they both thrive on very, very similar courses.
Rory and Dustin?
Rory and Dustin.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think the overall point
was like Rory delivered a performance good enough to win a golf tournament this week.
Totally.
Without a doubt.
And except like, for he had one guy to beat well. And he didn't chase him down at all.
Right.
Which I don't think except he didn't.
My biggest criticism would be the front nine on Sunday.
That was rough.
He didn't step up to the plate.
And that's where it's so hard to make this take without sounding so local sports talk radio. But like that's what it is. It's like, man, when the lights are brightest, he just didn't want it enough. I don't know, man.
The sixth hole was really strange.
That was really bad.
It was really bizarre.
Really bad.
I don't want to do too much rule stuff on this podcast today. We're going to do plenty of backstopping stuff. But
God.
DJ got a quote unquote questionable drop. He took a pretty wide stance to get his foot on the path to get a drop from behind a tree.
Hey, listen, that's conjecture.
It was
objection.
Rory takes he misses a fairway to the left, gets behind a tree, and claims that he's going to be playing further to the left. And he like takes a stance, and his foot would be like barely on the path. If he was going to play to the left,
and if he took that stance, he wouldn't even been able to make a backswing and get to the golf ball. Like it was
like he was clearly like wiggling to his body open to be able to get that stance. And the rules official stood up to him and was like, "No, like come on, are you kidding me?" And as soon as he doesn't get the ruling, he turns around, hits it left-handed back into the fairway.
Which so it's like, reportedly a rules official not known for giving those types of drops.
Yeah.
Correct?
So
Azinger was riding hard for that on the broadcast, saying like he should have asked for a second opinion. And I don't know, maybe
that's
Rory.
The first time a rules official stood up to a PGA Tour player in the last year.
That was
year,
sweet. And shout out to
I think he was
to,
a European Tour rules official that did
there we
that.
Go. Yeah. More WGCs then.
Shout out to NBC for just letting all of that
play
kind
out.
Of breathe. That was fascinating.
They even got a close
that conversation.
Camera angle of the ball and kind of what they were talking about, whether the club would hit the tree and all that.
Was it my man John Paramore?
It was not. No. John Paramore would have DQ'd him.
So he turns around, hits it left-handed, doesn't make it out to the fairway, tries to hit on the green anyways, hits in water and makes bogey. And that was the tournament.
Which was another good NBC thing where they're, I don't know if it was Bones or Azinger or both, that were kind of both like, okay, one thing, do not hit it in the water. Just hit it long. Take a big number out of play. You cannot make bogey here. Don't hit it in the water. And then it looked, I don't know. It's hard to tell from the telecast, but God, it looked like it wasn't even close.
No, it really wasn't close. It was, I don't know. Things were probably moving a bit quickly for him at that point. He ended up actually making bogey. He dropped it and then got up and down from the drop area. But
Dustin has a, you know, tap and birdie.
Yeah, it was like he was kind of pressing, I think, at that point already. It's like, if I lose strokes on this hole, then it's probably over. And it was, but. Interestingly enough, so Rory's finishes this year, T4, T5, T4, and now solo second, first on the PGA Tour in strokes gained on the season. Rory has been the best golfer on the PGA Tour so far this year, statistically.
Which I guess, so my question about Rory is why is Rory so good at turning it on almost like after it's too late, right? Like he's got a propensity for turning it on and making a boatload of birdies. I mean, he made what, six birdies on the back nine today? Shot 31 with a bogey on 18. He never seems to do that in round two or round three.
Yeah. He did in round one. He shot 63 in round one. But yeah, it kind of just fizzled for a really long time there, I guess, in that middle stretch where we thought he might launch himself forward. And
maybe it's just sample size. Yeah. And like this is just a weird, well, like trend for him, but it just seems like there's way too many instances. And I mean, I can think back to like two or three at Augusta alone where he's charging
a couple different years at Augusta.
Yeah. And he's
I forgot he played in the final group with Patrick Reed. So they said that. And, I kind of forgot he was like in the picture.
It's because he's deceased.
Well, he might be deceased.
I thought about this, I was like, man, he's just not hitting it close enough to the hole. And then I went into StatTracker, and he led the field in proximity this week. So it's definitely not that. But I think the frustrating feeling comes from that he gets it so close to the hole. He's in such a great position off the tee. He's, I would say, the best driver of the golf ball in the world. He gets it in such great position that he doesn't hit it close enough for where he's hitting from. He's still hitting it like way closer than the field does or way closer than...
Because he's so far up the fairway.
But he's so far up, and he's hitting quote-unquote average shots from that distance.
Do the strokes gain like you know, approaching the green? Is that taken into account?
You can't gain as many strokes approaching the green if you're super far down the fairway. Like you just, like Cat this week sacrificed a
but
bunch
off
the tee.
You can lose them though too, right?
You can lose them. So it's just kind of, he has very average approach numbers. But basically what I'm saying is
he's
hitting,
killing everybody so much
off the tee. So, but like average from 120 is different than like good from 160. So like his average from 120 is still better than somebody gaining strokes from 160. So the stats kind of are a little funky in that regard. The basis being he just doesn't hit it quite close enough for how close he gets it to the green is my ticket.
He's too good.
He hits it so, but like the thing we've talked about for so long is he has so much speed and like the flash speed and the hip separation that, you know, when you're hitting wedges, that doesn't really apply. That's tough to dial back.
I do think I noticed it last week at Riv. He started hitting. He's capable of hitting a fade now.
For
which,
sure.
Which yeah. I think is yeah. like he hasn't. I feel like now he's working the ball both ways and he's sawing his wedges off a little bit more, getting a little bit more distance control. So I feel like Rory's trending.
I would say so.
Nothing gets me more hot and bothered than good distance control, as you guys know.
Exactly. I'm trying to pander to you, dude.
Which actually, I don't know. Solly mentioned that earlier this week. Just like, man, I don't think anybody hits it past the pin more than Rory.
Why is he always yelling sit?
Of course, like it kind of becomes confirmation bias after you hear that, but it was kind of stark once you start thinking about it like that.
You know who else does that? Ikarito. He's always long, and I'm trying to tell him to be short of the hole. I mean,
wait till you guys see Torosaw season 3.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. Like Tiger has always prided himself on hitting it pin high, and that's the easiest place to make putts from. It's where the flattest putts are when you're pin high. And Rory, I feel like, is often above the hole, often putting downhill. That's just, I don't have anything to back that up, but I feel like that's what my eyes are seeing. So,
all right, speaking of not making putts, you guys want to move on?
Let's do it.
All right, there's another listener voicemail here.
Hey, guys. This is Clay from Alabama. I just want to talk about Jordan Spieth. The guy's putting inside of 10 feet this week was just absolutely abysmal. I just want to know if it's safe to say that he has the yips. Don't know. You know, I'll leave that up to y'all. Appreciate it.
All right. A lot of good accents in the listener voicemails.
We got them.
So the question, does Jordan Spieth have the yips? I wouldn't say that any of the four of us are necessarily qualified to make that call, but if you guys feel different,
I think Randy is qualified to make that call because he's battled for long and hard with the yips.
What's your take, Randy?
He doesn't truly have the yips. He doesn't have the type of yips that make you call my friend Hank on Saturday mornings to get a fix.
Should he go left-handed? That's what Hank says the last resort is, right?
That's the nuclear option.
Yeah.
The first step is to
he already puts cross-hand, right?
The true first step is to diagnose. You got to figure out which hand your yip is in.
Right.
Is it a left hand? Is it a right hand? And then you got to get that hand essentially. So a lot of them are the right hand, and Hank says you got to get that palm.
Hank Haney we're talking about.
You got it, my friend Hank. You got to turn it so it's not facing the hole. Like you essentially have to reposition your hand.
Okay.
So I was trying not to have this panic, I think, until I really dove into what happened on Saturday, where he first of all, for the week, he was 51st out of 72 in strokes gained putting. I'm far below average, not good. He lost 5.2 strokes to the field on Saturday putting. That is horrific. Wait until you hear the details. So he starts on the back nine. On 12, he missed from 4 feet 4 inches. On 15, he missed from 4 feet 5 inches. On 17, he missed from 4 feet 9 inches. On 1, he missed from 5. On 2, he missed from 3 feet. And on 3, he missed from 1 foot 8 inches. And on 6, he missed from 4 feet. The 1 foot 8 inch, I mean, maybe it was one of those where you go to tap it in. I didn't see it, but like that's the one that
downhill
when I started diving into these, I'm like, oh my God, he's 1/16th on the tour this year, just barely below average.
Guys, everybody's selling. I'm going to buy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like he's just that weird athlete that once it clicks and he's doing something to overcompensate for something, or he's got something mechanical going on. He didn't have Greller on the bag this week, which shout out to Michael. And his father Bear passed away. Anybody named Bear is
a legend.
Had to have been an absolute legend.
Exactly.
I think he was probably out, you know, a little bit out of his element this week, and he's been fighting a little bit of late, and he's got what, 4 weeks now or really 6 weeks now to kind of fix it for Augusta. So
if you get going the wrong way on POA, like
that's what I was gonna say,
we can go bad really quickly.
And then you get back on, you get back on Ben or Bermuda and
it's not the same
thing. You feel like you're playing a different sport, right?
So not full panic button, but the most alarming that we've
had. I'd be more concerned about if his long game was off. If he couldn't find his driver, that would be more concerning for me.
That wasn't good either. Yeah. The data's not good there either. But
his short putting was always kind of a bit misleading, right? Like, I think everybody's always thought
he was the best putter in the world.
Yeah, and it was really that, you know, especially in 2015 there, where he's making a ton of 20, 25 footers and kind of skewing some of the stats.
Which was nuts.
Which was crazy.
God, he made so many long putts.
Part of it, too, is like, is he just like the streakiest putter in the world?
Possibly.
It
could be. That very well could be. But
he certainly need to consider that option.
He was never good, never even above average from 4 to 8 feet. Like, that was always been a problem zone for him. And like, I remember, like in 16, the year he almost won the Masters and should have won it, like he was making everything above 8 feet and missing so many putts from like between 4 and 8 feet. So
I got a question about putting stats, and I think this is as good a time as any. So if you're below average from 4 to 8 feet on the PGA Tour, like how many missed putts per 100 is that from like being slightly above average?
So tour players make an 8 foot putt 50% of the time. That's the dividing line. And you make about 6 foot putt about 66% of the time, I believe it is. So, I mean, that 4 to 8 feet is a pretty wide range, actually. I mean, a lot of putts come from in that area. Are you asking how many, what percent of putts come from that area?
Well, I didn't. Yeah. And I guess my point is, I think I would trade being like the best putter from 4 to 8 feet to be like the best putter from 20 plus feet.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I would prefer to be better from 4 to 8 feet. You're because have way more.
Well, I feel like the range is so tight there where it's like, okay, I can be below average from 4 to 8 feet, but what are we talking about? Like one putt a weekend, you know, one stroke. Well, whereas if I'm the best from 20 plus feet, maybe that's finding, you know,
oh God. So speed
more strokes, but I don't know the answer to that.
Speed has had 91 putts from between 4 and 8 feet this year. He's made 53. That's 198th on tour, which might be dead last. I don't know. From 20 to 25 feet, he's 89th. And from greater than 25 feet, he's third.
So, there you go.
So he's basically the best lag player on the
planet. You said the leader. How many is the leader?
The leader in putting from 4 to 8 feet is Martin Piller. He's at 43 attempts, made 35, so 81%. It basically goes 81%, 80%, 80%, 80%. So.
And if Spieth was making 80%, he would have made somewhere between 25 more putts this year. Okay. So way more than you would make in the increment if you from the long range. So
Shout out to the Shrimp. He's T2 in that stat, putting from 4 to 8 feet.
It's my guy.
So yeah. I think the way Mark Brody would say is like everything above 8 feet is relatively. Basically, what he tells amateurs is either chip it close or it doesn't matter where it goes, because once you get more than 10 feet away,
you're probably going to two-putt.
You're probably going to two-putt.
After playing golf in California for 9 or 10 days and putting on POA and like I was thrilled to get back to Bermuda, which
is saying a lot. Yeah, I was the exact same way. You guys want to talk about the big cat?
Sure.
What did you guys think? Brandel made a big deal about his strategy off the tee this week, laying back a bit off the tee. Was there anything to that in your guys' opinion?
It was like Litham or Hoylake in 06, right?
A little different.
Different result. I don't know. It seemed really suspect when you saw Dustin and Rory bombing it over in all these tight spots. And I don't know. I don't have a great answer for it, but it doesn't.
I don't think Tiger's got that gear. Like I feel like we've been yelling at the TV for years to take driver out of his bag. And like you get to this golf course, which is narrow as hell with trees everywhere. I feel like he's not a guy that stands up and has extreme confidence in jamming driver into some of these places that Rory and Tiger were trying to jam it. So
it kind of almost speaks a little bit to the Chapultepec stuff, because a lot of people see this incredibly tight golf course and they're like, oh man, this is, you know, this should favor short hitters. And then why do we see Dustin and Rory up there? And I think what gets lost in that is Dustin and Rory, for how long they are, drive it so incredibly straight.
So straight.
And Tiger doesn't do that.
It's like not bomb and gouge. Yeah. Like, people think it's bomb and gouge, but it's like these guys are so unbelievably accurate. And they're like as accurate as middle of the road players and just way further down the fairway.
Well, and that's where I was kind of...
They're also driving it over some of the stuff.
Correct. For sure. Without a doubt.
I'm still on Spieth's page.
That a lot of the shorter guys can't.
That's where it almost kind of seems like Chapultepec really punishes those guys in the middle. Because Rory and Dustin, when they're driving it over a lot of this stuff, it's like you know, they're closer to the green and they can wedge out or whatever and still probably get to the green from a shorter distance. Whereas Jordan, when he's driving it crooked at this place, he's giving up, you know, 20 yards or whatever, and he's way further back and all of that stuff, and it just kind of starts to snowball. So
you kind of see that with Kuchar in the third round.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing alongside those guys.
He finished, he was playing alongside DJ, and he finished 23 shots behind DJ for the week.
Jesus.
Blown out to sea.
Things are moving quickly.
After his four putt, which was awesome.
You don't have to tip 10% if you don't win.
That's a heady play. Yeah.
But so that's kind of where, with a golf course, which elevation equivalent was playing somewhere between 6,100 and 6,200 yards, I have a hard time being like, hey, Tiger, you didn't pound driver enough. When the overall goal is after two shots to be close to the hole, right? Tiger was sixth in proximity to the hole this week. So like,
He couldn't make any putts.
He led the field in approach, but like it, laying back to 200 yards at this altitude is like 9-iron. Like that's not like a insane layup. So I thought some of that was misguided. He didn't drive it well. I mean, hitting one OB off the first tee to start the tournament set him back pretty far.
That is wild that he was that good in proximity.
Yeah.
That sixth from playing all the way back there is, I guess that kind of debunks a lot of
I almost feel like I've never really played at altitude, or the one time I played at altitude in like Montana, I didn't realize I was at altitude until halfway through the round. And Neil and I looked at each other and we were flabbergasted. We're like, I just flew that green by 20 yards, man. Like, oh yeah, we're at 4,000 feet or, you know. But I feel like it would almost be tougher to hit half wedges and figure out what all your wedges were doing than just to hit a full stock
shot. It's not 25. It's not 15% for a wedge. Like it's not 15%.
It's a very, very variable.
Right.
Yeah. On average, Tiger hit it closer than Dustin this week.
Yeah. That's nutty. He didn't putt it great. I think the broadcast was kind of acting like he would have won this tournament if he'd have putted normal. I mean, he putted about field average. He was 38th in strokes gained putting. He did miss a ton of putts on Sunday, but they were just kind of like, he can't make any putts. But I mean, it wasn't, he hurt himself off the tee. That's kind of what held him back at least a little bit. Not laying back, but like not even being accurate for the most part off the tee. So I don't think there's a ton to take away from that. He hadn't seen that golf course ever before.
I think it's a win for Tiger.
Yeah. I think if that's a performance that we're kind of like somewhat disappointed in, then I think that's a good sign of things to come.
So he's taking next week off, and then he's playing
hometown event,
Bay Hill. And then, it's not really his hometown event.
Well, I know he's going to be home in town and not play the event. It's sick.
That's the best.
Yeah,
that's the dream.
Rory too, right?
Yeah, and then so then he'll play Bay Hill, and then he'll play Players, and then he'll play Match Play, and then
the schedule.
And then Augusta. And then we're there.
Yeah, yeah. The schedule did not do Honda any favors. That's like the event that's kind of like.
Well, I guess Jack was kind of pissed about it, but at the end of the day, like they carved out a spot and made Memorial a priority and cool. Yeah. You can't have it both ways. And and then you're going to, all right, cool. If you want to make Honda a big priority, then Bay Hill goes by the wayside. So there's no good way to do it.
Right. No, definitely not.
I think I really honestly treated this event like a major this weekend. Like I was dead set on watching as much of it as I could, just because it's so fun to watch guys play golf holes like this. And to be clear, I think this golf course is like so bad that it's good. Like it's so fun to watch guys navigate around these trees and play this crazy slopes on these greens and the crazy elevation. I think after more than a week of it, you'd get kind of sick of it, but I seriously love the change of pace in this tournament every year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know how, it's hard to say how quickly I would get sick of it, because I really, really like it a lot. Yeah. And I love the recovery shots and I love all of that stuff. And
shout out Club Pro guy. Club Pro guy.
This is like,
it's like Super Bowl.
Exactly. I don't know. I loved it. I'm a little bummed that it turned into such a runaway, which is
so boring.
You know, whatever. Nothing anybody can do about that. But I don't know. I just, it's the perfect change of pace, especially at this time of the year when you've kind of been watching like the Torrey Pines kind of slugfest type of places. And then, I don't know. I love it. It's great.
What's funny is we were watching as Tiger went into the bunker on the ninth hole on Friday. We were like looking at where these bunkers were like sandwiched in between trees. And we were like, this is so bad. And then Tiger came up with like the shot of the year probably so far out of that bunker. It's kind of like, all right, well, it gave us that moment. So
okay. So when for the for the listener, when you say it's so bad,
I was just going to say, I take issue with the adjective bad. I don't know what that means.
I agree. I think it's a little reductive. I know it's bad according to Golden Age architecture.
I mean, it's overgrown. It's hella overgrown.
Yeah,
sure.
Which I'm not equating that with bad. Yeah. I'm not gonna.
I just want to lay out the case for why
it feels like the course that you grew up playing.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, exactly.
Which is cool.
Yeah,
I feel like courses are like art. Like your bad is like fine. Your bad is bad, but it doesn't make it objectively bad.
I agree.
You know? That's fine. Yeah, I'm not saying objectively bad, but like just this particular shot, you're in a bunker already, and there's a tree right in front of you. Like it's a double penalty. It's kind of just like, that's way more exciting to watch guys play a course like this than a quote unquote like better test of golf.
And my rebuttal, and we talked about it as it was happening, was like what that produced the iconic Tiger shot of the last 5 years. So it's
forced him to hit a shot, prescribed shot.
Yeah. So. It's like I'm glad they put a tree in between the two bunkers. I think it's quirky. I'm not, for me, quirky equals good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was bad.
You just want to see variety. You want to see something different.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah, without a doubt. I just think like I would not want to see a golf course that tree lined every single week of the year. I think it just that doesn't. I don't think that's a great, wonderful, entertaining test of golf. But that's my opinion.
It's produced good leaderboards though. I mean, some of that's the for WGC. Sure.
It's kind of not an option.
Good fields. Yeah.
Yeah.
We bang on the tour a lot. I bang on the tour a lot. The fact that there's a WGC event in Mexico City at this course that I was looking around Google Earth the other day, and I can't figure out how they get even half the tents and people and all the infrastructure in there. And it is remarkable that they moved the tournament from Doral to Mexico City, and it's like it's a win for the fans.
And the fans are awesome there.
Well, A, the fans are awesome there, and B, it's awesome to watch on TV, where Doral was one of my least favorite tournaments of the year.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, and it's funny how Kuchar actually benefited from going to Mexico, because those fans are so nice and supportive. Like, he got harassed at RIV, and the fans there are just, like, excited for their tournament. They didn't care about the Kuchar thing. Like, and it was kind of a story going into it. Was he going to get harassed? But
did DJ's brother, I didn't notice it today, did he have the Trump logo on his sleeve?
I didn't notice.
I didn't know we were looking for that.
Well, yeah, he always wears like that. It's basically the Trump logo that he's got on the side of his plane with 737 or 757. And he's got that on the side of his sleeve.
We must mention, of course, the first tee announcer is maybe one of the top five things about golf.
Totally.
That guy brings the heat. introduces DJ as DJ Dustin Johnson.
He's got a great aesthetic, too.
Yeah, he does.
Like, I think he's a TV star or something.
For that role.
Yeah. The Grupo Salinas guy in the booth. I mean, he's got a great aesthetic. He's got a great, the maroon jacket and everything.
With a big patch on it.
Which, going back to the Austin Johnson thing, like I just asked that because I hope he didn't have it on there. Because I think that's
that would be a little
super aggro and like have some respect for the people that are there.
I think when a lot of people see this golf course, I don't know. I think that the average fan looks at that and at it as much more exciting than like quote unquote bad, I guess, is my main takeaway from this week. And I think I could see people making the case for this is why we should play way more tree-lined golf courses because and I don't know like how to necessarily argue that. I know that the stock argument is trees are bad for the average player because they slow everything down and they make the game harder and all of those things, but at the same time, it's like it kind of feels like swooping in and telling people that what they like is bad, and I don't want to be in that business, I guess. Does that make sense?
For sure. I agreed with you. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, I think too, it's when people go back to their club and say, hey, we need to take down trees, and they say, why?
Yeah.
I just watched this tournament and it's awesome and that sort of thing. And to a certain extent, trees force decisions and they don't necessarily create options for you, but if you're going to prescribe the option and you got to hit that shot, sometimes that makes for just as good a golf where, hey, you got to do this. And if you don't do it, like,
you're hosed.
You're fucked.
That's what the pros love, though. That's what they love, like being dictated, like where I need to hit it.
But I think that kind of
gets. This is like extreme Firestone, right?
It is. And it kind of gets to the larger point, which is that the whole like width and options, width and angles thing, like doesn't work on the PGA Tour.
I hear you there.
Either you're going to have to make it play extremely firm, which is hard to guarantee.
I was
going to
say the greens are always too soft for it.
Yeah, and or guys are going to shoot 900 under par.
Or the tour doesn't have an appetite for explaining to guys.
Yeah, which
hey,
I kind of hey, get.
Here's why there's a short grass runoff
right.
that goes 30 yards from the green like at Trinity Forest last year.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know. It's hard. I think it gets into the Bellerive conversation as well, why people were like upset with saying Bellerive is bad and all of these things. And it eventually, when we're looking at this as like an entertainment product, you start to look at, okay, the leaderboard at Bellerive was really good and the tournament was really good. And like, I don't know, why am I fighting on what's
that was a bad golf course.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't care, I guess. But like, you know, like
you say that, like if Big Cat wasn't at Bellerive and Brooks would have ran away with it, we wouldn't have been like.
But that's kind of every tournament, to be honest.
Without a doubt, if you can guarantee, if you just said Bellerive, that we designed this course because it means Tiger's going to compete, I'd be like, good, in on that.
I don't know.
Augusta should have done that instead of quote unquote Tiger proofing it or whatever they did. Like,
yeah.
It was great for the game when Tiger was dominating Augusta.
So I think the onus is on the Riddler.
For sure.
To bring Augusta back to,
everyone's going to follow his lead.
If the cat can hit it anywhere he wants off the tee and then basically conjure something up on the approach shots and you're going to have great drama down the stretch, why wouldn't you want to do that? Cut down the rough, chop down those trees that you planted off the side of 15 and some of those other holes, and let's do it up, man.
All in on that. We ended the last podcast, on the last podcast, we were quite hard on another broadcasting partner. What was your guys' assessment of NBC coming back into the fold this week?
I'm retired. I'll let you guys take this one.
Randy, go ahead.
Well, I was traveling in the RV last week, so I wasn't really a part of the conversation. I continue to think the NBC telecast is perfectly adequate. Yep. It suited my needs. And like DJ, I am to the point where I just can't muster the energy to care much week in and week out.
I watched the entire day yesterday. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, just it was fast paced. It was, even when they're showing putt after putt after putt, it's like they're showing twice as many of those putts as the other broadcast partner that we won't mention. But yeah, I mean, everything's working in symphony with each other. There's a certain level of comfort, and there's a certain level of confidence with the broadcast to where they feel like they've got the right people there and they've got the guys on the ground and they've got enough cameras out there to capture everything. And it's like, hey, let's make sure this thing goes point A to point B to point C to point D instead of just saying, cool, we're just going to go from point A to point B.
No, I thought Thursday through Saturday was like really, really solid and like a very refreshing change of pace. Sunday, whether it was actually true or not, I feel like I noticed the commercials a heck of a lot more. It may have had something to do with, you know, DJ kind of it never really being that close, but Sunday felt a bit slow, a bit like, you know, I was kind of like, all right, I'm ready for something to happen here or something to kind of captivate me the way the first few days did. I thought they did an awesome job with all the elevation stuff, like constantly putting up graphics to see, you know, that's so important to this event. And it does tell the story. I think I actually got an altitude headache by the end of it by all the times they mentioned it.
Going back to the course, if this course was at sea level or let's say they were playing a 63 or 6,400 mm-hmm. yard course at sea level. Would that be as interesting? Would they be hitting the variety of shots? Right. Would they be flying greens with wedges, that sort of thing? Like, I think it's like a perfect storm of this is a really cool tournament mm-hmm. and this course is good because it's at altitude, because it's tight, because it's like there's a ton of variables and everything that are kind of in play. I think the other thing too is Thursday, Friday during an NBC week. Like that's when I really, really noticed the difference. And I don't know what the dynamics are there. I don't know who's producing that. I don't know if that's, you know, the NBC guys in there versus the other networks guys in there. But I like the entire pacing and just motivation to show golf seems to be different on an NBC week, even on Thursday, Friday, when they aren't technically the broadcast partner.
What'd you guys think of Bryson's new incident? Thursday afternoon, after a very poor putting round, takes his putter out.
Randy's got
I was going to say, I can muster some energy here.
This is Randy's boy, so we'll let him.
I do like Bryson.
Randy kind of wants to, Randy might make a leave Bryson alone video.
Here's where I net out. We're going to, trying to think of the right word. We're going to pressure. We're going to
neuter.
You know, essentially pressure Bryson into being neutered. He's going to, you know, be on his P's and Q's at all times, you know, on camera especially. And, you know, as a result, I think the fan is the one that's going to get hurt because I guarantee at some point in the next year, I'm going to be on here talking about, you know what, there just aren't that many interesting guys in professional golf. Like, who is grabbing my attention, be it, you know, good or, you know, bad from a drama perspective? Like, I love it. He's like, who and what is he really hurting with that? Like, I don't really get the outrage over it, except for obviously it's on the heels of the bunker incident, and I think he's a bit of a easy target
over it.
Over
like either of them. Like, I mean, Sergio, like he was public enemy number one for 10 days. Like, he basically took the heat off the Saudis.
Sergio got disqualified for tearing up.
I was going to say they don't really seem like equal events. So I don't think Bryson should have gotten.
But there's a trend in play here for Bryson. I mean, there's a.
Like, are you affected? I'm curious, like, how it affects.
I mean, I wasn't affected by Sergio's either, but
that's what I'm saying. Like, as a fan, right? Back to like, if golf is an entertainment product, like, I don't understand why are we upset.
Oh, no. I think it's two things. Like, Bryson, like, shouldn't do what he did. Like, definitely not. But like,
why?
For content purposes,
let me pull that thread.
It?
No, let me pull that thread. Why?
Like, if every player's going out slamming clubs into green, like, destroying, like, that's a horrible example.
Same reason why, like,
was the green destroyed?
Is an issue.
Like, if every player does that, if all the juniors,
green, we should point out,
yeah,
putting green,
is that like at the highest level? Like, do we want everyone in golf to be think that's okay
it's
to
like,
treat
all
a
right,
golf
Randy,
course
like,
that
do
way?
You want to go out to Jack's Beach this week and have the guy in front of us slamming his putter and like?
I guarantee people do. Like, you don't think people
not like that? I mean, that was.
I guarantee what happens at Jack's Beach is far worse than anything we'll see on tour.
Right, but if that is okay to do, then like it, then so everyone could in theory do that. And like, what would a green look like if everyone came through and slammed their club into it like that?
Right. I guess my point is probably like what they look like now.
No, we got a nice new product. Yeah, man. You can't be.
This seems like the old Charles Barkley NBA. Like, listen, I'm not a role model. I'm not trying to raise your kids, and as an entertainment entity, I don't want Bryson to raise my kids. Like, be entertaining.
Listen, I don't want Bryson to raise my kids either.
You might be.
I think it's such faux out. Like, it's such misplay. Like, who cares?
Everyone is super fired up right now. Everyone's so mad about everything right now.
I am I'm weirdly with you, but I also think you might be a bridge too far for me. Like, I get the sentiment of what you're saying, where it's kind of like, let's, you know.
If he wouldn't have destroyed the bunker in Riviera last week.
Yeah. Oh, come on. We talk about like it's like a crater in the like, you know, it's like bombed out now. I just, oh my gosh.
What would you have preferred? What would you have preferred to happen?
In response to him doing that? Yeah. Or
so he's shown on BBC or Sky or whatever it was, taking a big chunk out of the putting green and then fixing it immediately.
How about that underrated element of it? Like, this wasn't even...
Which is...
This was in the background of their, like, post-game
but
show.
But the caddy hands him the putter to do it, too. That's the best part. It's
So what would you have...
Like, we all kind of laugh at it.
Everyone
like
has
we just
a laugh
did.
And then you move on.
Yeah.
But like, all right, so what if 30 kind of guys, there. It's 144 man.
I mean, Tron, you're asking me things 72. That don't affect me. Like, if 30 guys did it, I still don't care. I like it. It's chaos.
There's
it's
not
going to
be a practice putting green there anymore, though.
Well, I'm sure that I'm sure there's money to fix it. It's just so far, I don't know. I don't like the slippery slope argument. Like, well, what if
like,
everybody
it's like,
did
why
it?
Is Bryson allowed to act like an asshole and... Nobody else on tour is.
I think other guys are allowed. I mean, I think anybody could do that. I don't know. I guess. Well, you know, he's gonna fit inside golf's little box sooner or later, and then we'll be back to like, oh, why isn't
miserable.
This entertaining?
Well,
like, here's another tournament I'm watching. These guys are all kind of vanilla and whitewashed and. I just feel like we can't have it both ways. We can't demand more personalities for golf to like go back to how it was. And then when we see personality, when we see stuff like that, then we just berate them.
Oh, I'm fine with him doing that. as long as he gets, you know, if there's a requisite consequence for it and he wants to keep doing it, cool. All for it.
Well, he had the PR team of Watson Scott working with him to rectify this.
I think this is why I'm so pissed about it.
This is from Bubba or Ted Scott's Twitter or I don't know, something.
Can you do that, Bubba? I don't know. I've been off this week. Shot over par yesterday. So I'm trying, I can't get the bounce right. It's spinning sometimes.
This is a video from Ted Scott's Twitter or something. I'm not sure.
Science Saturday.
They're in the locker room. For those of you who didn't see this, they're walking around looking for Bryson.
Is somebody shirtless in this one?
No one's shirtless.
That was the other one.
Yeah.
Bounce right, yeah. So I want to know, how are you detecting the firmness of the greens? How are you getting where you can guess how it's going to bounce or spin?
Dude, it's pretty simple. I mean, all you got to do is just kind of test.
Bryson's using his arm like a fulcrum.
Straight you can get it. Yep. What you got to do is obviously contract the bicep, both heads.
Yep. And he's basically explaining how he destroyed the screen. It's very funny. You should all
check
it out.
See, like, words matter again. Like, is the green destroyed?
Look, again, Chaos Theory loves this. Yeah. Like, do I actually care about this? No.
No, hold on. Is the green destroyed?
No, it's not destroyed.
No. Okay.
Practice green.
Slamming.
It's the practice green destroyed.
Well, so the Sergio,
someone call it the rub of the green.
The Sergio stuff is way different. That was competitive greens, sure, where he's affecting the competition.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you that this really doesn't mean anything.
No. I think it's people who don't like Bryson want a reason to yell at Bryson.
Yeah.
Totally.
But I guess my larger issue with this isn't this per se. It's we're going to try to force Bryson into golf's boring box that everybody else gets placed into. Right, and I think that's a shame.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
All right. This is another listener voicemail.
Hey, guys. Terry from Carlsbad, and I have a question for you. I heard that Callaway, you know, the best and most dynamic golf company in the universe.
Here we go.
The number one driver at the World Golf Championship down in Mexico. And I know that has to be because of the new flash face technology combined with jailbreak. It's giving all these tour players massive jumps in ball speed. It also looks so damn sexy with its carbon crown and adjustable perimeter weighting.
This caller seems to have quite an agenda to be pushing on this call.
Where are the Callaway headquarters?
Yeah. So my question is, I'm thinking about irons on tour.
I thought
right
we said
now.
Quick takes.
I know that Callaway invented the forged distance iron with the Apex.
All right, get it in here.
I know that the all-new Apex with its ridiculously fast cup face technology and urethane microspheres make that long forged iron feel ridiculously buttery. Doesn't even seem possible in a forged iron, really.
Harry, there's got to be a question.
Come on, buddy.
Well, if you couple that with a chrome soft golf ball,
oh my gosh,
you know, the ball that changed the ball, because it brought golfers everywhere that combination of low compression, great feel, fast ball speeds due to its graphene-infused soft fast core, and ultra-thin tour urethane cover.
Get to it.
I got two wins on tour already.
Two wins.
You guys know that. So my question is this.
Here we go.
Do any of you guys backstop when you play casual rounds with your buddies? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thank you to what we can only assume was the chief marketing officer of Callaway Golf, Harry Arnett, for that incredibly specific question. Do any of you backstop while playing competitive rounds? Tron, I'm going to start with you here, I would think. This is kind of your bread and butter on both sides. On both sides.
Well, Tron is currently doing the Ray Lewis dance to get ready to come in to do these takes.
Guys, I'm gonna leave that to you. Do I backstop?
I've never seen someone so incredibly pro and anti backstopping, depending on the context.
Hey, typically when we're out at Jack's Beach or Timaquana or wherever we're out at, we're playing a game, right?
Sure.
And I have a teammate in that game. And I'm typically trying to provide a backstop for my teammate.
I think when we were in California, I heard you say, quote, Randy, don't you even think about marking that fucking golf ball.
You might say it's applied differently for professional golf than it might be in
we're not playing for, you know, as J.B. Holmes said, millions of dollars.
Well, all right. So the backstopping reared its...
it was disgusting.
Reared its head this week on the LPGA. I kind of want to. I'm going to retire preemptively from this one too, because I do not care about backstopping.
I got to say,
I am tapping out too.
Yeah.
I got to say, Solly waded into backstopping this weekend.
I regret it so much.
And Solly, how did that go for you?
But there's a good reason why I did, because I felt like I try not to get into it, because I think for the most part, first of all, Tron has covered this topic plenty for all of us. But
Tron's
this
like
was
the Neil deGrasse Tyson of backstopping.
This was the reason why I got into it, was like this was the most egregious one that I've seen at at any level, and it had
fist bump
everything to it. It had like, so what happened, if you missed it, this video came from Duncan French. It's been looped 238,000 times, so people like were really fired up about this.
People are keen on backstopping.
Aria Jutanagarn hits a chip onto the green from greenside. She like walks towards it to start going to go mark her ball, and she asks Amy Olsen if she should go mark it. She like kind of motions to her, and she's like, her momentum is going in that direction, and like Amy clearly, like Amy's off screen, but like tells her not to, and so like Aria stops like by the green. Amy Olsen hits her chip shot, waved her off, hits her shot. It's flying by the hole, bangs off Aria's ball, stops right next to the hole. They go laugh about it, and they go fist bump each other by the hole. So, again, the rule in stroke play under Rule 15.3, if two or more players agree to leave a ball in place on the putting green to help any player, and the stroke is made with that helping ball left in place, each player who made the agreement gets two penalty strokes. If that motion to like, hey, should I mark it? And like, no, you're fine, isn't an agreement. Like, what are they expecting them to sign a contract on the green?
Like, it seems like Arias was like, hey, that's clearly in your.
Yes, like it's going to help you.
Yes.
Like, this is good. So, my whole point to it was like, all right, and there's a couple arguments against it that are really bad, I think. We'll touch on those. But if the ball was between where Amy was playing and the hole, she would have given her the time to go mark it because it would have like negatively affected her.
Or within probably a 2 foot.
Yeah.
Window between
yes.
where her line was.
Well, so that's not a pace of play thing if that's the case. Because, like, if I'm 100 yards out and there's a ball, like, a foot in front of the hole, I'm not sending somebody up to go mark it.
This
that's
is
a pace
the
of play
only
thing.
Time when professional golfers ever give a shit about pace of play.
Well, that's exactly the point. Yeah. And, like, if the ball was 8 feet behind the hole, I wouldn't have really had an issue with this. It's, like, kind of that gray area. You still shouldn't do it, but, like, it wasn't as blatant as this. And if you're not going to call a penalty for something this blatant, then, like, we're done and moving on. Like, that's why I want to put closure to this. Like,
God, the people God that willing. Said, well, so, hold on.
Fingers crossed.
The people that said, all right, Aria and
Amy.
And Amy were like, they're like the two most honest.
I'm sure.
Cool. That's fine. Even if it was out of like ignorance, cool. Like they still, like their intent was still clear. The thing that makes me mad is when people respond on Twitter and say, yeah, but like if they're that good to aim at a ball that's, you know, 6 inches behind the hole and 2 feet to the right.
Why wouldn't
they just aim for the hole? Like
literally no one's arguing that.
I do agree with you there.
Like, that's the dumbest
that they're,
thing
they're
I've ever
not
heard.
Not that good, and the ball was going to go way past the hole.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
It's
so
like, hey, like there's a dispersion pattern yeah. here, you know?
And what we're talking about pace of play when you're actually green side is we're talking about the difference between like 10 and 20 seconds, like less than 1% of any part of a round.
It's like I think Kip Henley said it on Twitter today. He was like, yeah, they were really far off the green. They were like 8 yards off the green.
They were like at the hole. I actually timed this out. They're at the hole fist bumping 12 seconds after the ball's made contact. So like that's how far away they were. And so my overall point to all this, and people have asked, like, it's actually a fair question to ask, like, where's the dividing line? And I don't think there's a definitive answer to that. But I know if I'm playing a greenside shot, whether or not the ball should be marked. And golfers, this is a game of integrity. Like, you know whether a ball is sitting there potentially going to help you. Like, in your head, you
actually,
know.
Actually, I had beers with Pricey. Aaron Price earlier, he said they should have – the tours should have a like 25 yards out or 30 yards out or however far out they want. Just a simple line that – all right, cool. If you're outside of that – backstopping is in play. If you're inside of that, you have to mark.
Why don't they just get some more free volunteers out there to, as soon as the ball touches the green, they go out there and mark it? Like in tennis, you get the ball boys running out there in tennis. That'd be kind of sick.
But yeah, no one's accusing, I wasn't accusing anybody of cheating. But it also states in the rule, even if you're not aware
of
this
rule,
not? I didn't say cheating. I think the rule was violated without any question.
I don't think they were, well, I think they were so ignorant to it that they weren't yes. intentionally cheating. I think Aria Jutanagarn is one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
In women's golf, like she's awesome, but you know, just like enforce the rules. Like the fact that they didn't enforce it in this scenario means they're never, ever, ever going to enforce it ever.
And so I think the only solution here, and it's not going to get solved, but like it's on the player, it's on Aria Jutanagarn, get up there and mark your ball. And once you've declared your intent to mark it, the other player cannot play. Like it is a penalty if they play. So it's up to the players to do it. They won't police it because they haven't.
They both said, all right, we're never going to do this again. We're all right, cool. Well, if you didn't do anything wrong this time,
yeah,
why would you do anything differently?
And if you got, they're playing a match against each other, there's no way she would have left that ball there.
That's the bottom line. That if really there was, if this was match play,
because TC said so.
No, if it was match play, are you leaving that ball there?
Not a chance.
Yeah. Hell no.
If it's a 72nd hole, there's no way you would have done it. Yeah. And it was a one shot difference. So that answers the question. We can put it to bed until next week when a new incident comes.
All right,
let's get some more voicemails.
We need to wake Randy up here.
Okay. All right, I'm back. Cool.
Hey guys, Arthur calling in from Goodwood, Ontario, up in beautiful Canada.
A lot of Canadian voicemails.
Great wood.
Golf panel last night. Had a rebroadcast of the 1984 Players Championship. Fred Couples won. It's a great watch. It had it all. Big question is, why isn't Golf Channel doing this all the time instead of replaying the legend of Bagger Vance for the 8,000th time? That's it. That's all. Thanks for all the content.
That was a very defeated.
Sounds like it's been a long winter for Arthur.
Yeah, very defeated sounding voicemail from Arthur. So as I understand this, I mean, I think this is something that Golf Channel or the tour or whoever obviously has thought of. Like, we're not the first people to think of this. But I think that the way it works, according to some hashtag sources, is that basically Golf Channel has to pay every time any kind of PGA Tour footage is on there. Their TV or is on their air that comes out of a, you know, a bucket of broadcast rights that they paid for or whatever. And so I think the easiest way to say it is, like, it's cheaper to run the Legend of Bagger Vance.
Without a doubt.
So I think they save these kinds of highlight shows for, you know, like the 1984 Players was won by Fred Couples, and Fred Couples is on Faraday, and so there was, like, some self-interest in actually running that one this week. And then they also save it for the Masters and the US Open and all that stuff, which is awesome. It sucks for it kind of seems like the worst of both of all worlds, both for the PGA Tour, because they don't have, you know, like, how sick would it be to have old WGC, I guess it'd be Doral or whatever this week, but like some old Tiger Doral win this week leading up to Mexico, or that maybe is a bad example, but some old Honda Classic or some old, you know, whatever, have those each week would be awesome for everybody, and you would think it'd be awesome for the tour. But I also get that they gotta, you know, whatever, they sell something that's worth a lot of money and they gotta protect that and draw the line somewhere. So, like a lot of things in golf, it kind of seems like the worst case scenario for all parties involved.
For all the fans,
for Golf Channel and for the tour. It kind of seems like everybody loses in this scenario, but c'est la vie, I guess.
Seems like cutting off your arm to spite your hand.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Like the major, like, overlying issue we have with the tour is, like, a lack of kind of vision for what the game could be if it's reaching more people, and, like, they would rather view it from a business perspective and not
let
people.
But it sucks.
At a small level, I get it. If you want to meet your short-term goals and hit your PowerPoint numbers, then I get it. But
let's move on. Good question, because that's something we lament all the time.
Real quick on that, I watched some of that 84. It was, first of all, it was awesome.
So cool.
TPC looked so cool. Lee Trevino on Sunday, while he was in contention, got interviewed on the 17th tee before he hit his tee shot. It was awesome. Like, I didn't even know that could happen.
Well, that happens on the.
Well, that's the thing. Every time they show one of these things where it's, whether it's the Calvin Peet year or like 93 or 94 when the weather was crazy. I'm always left like, man, like, I'd watch so many more of these.
Yeah.
And it's, all right, cool. Like, you don't want Golf Channel to show them? Cool. Like, if I'm a PGA Tour Live subscriber, I get access to these.
I think they did this with a YouTube thing a while ago. I forget what it was called. I think it was like PGA Tour Rewind or something like that, where they threw a ton of these up on YouTube and you had to pay like $5 to access them, but they didn't really market it. And I don't know, the whole thing is like watching it with other people too.
Like being able to have community with it and all that.
But like part of the reason why we picture the majors so vividly is they have these highlight shows on around pretty much every, you know, Masters. They'll do a marathon. Like, do that with the Players. I don't have memories of the Players.
Sully, are you suggesting that the Players should be a major?
I didn't say that. If they want it to be a major, then that's the first place to start. It's like, give people image. Like, what's your? I don't have memories of the Players in the 90s, and I don't know.
All right, let's move on.
This is Connor from Atlanta, guys. I just wanted to ask, why do we always have to listen to the How to Train Your Dragon movie premiere during the golf telecast? I don't understand why, but
this one is really close to my heart. Why do we have to deal with the How to Train Your Dragon promos on golf? I don't know the answer, but that really grinded my gears this week too. I gotta imagine that's, I don't know, some Comcast. There's only like four companies in the world, so I'm sure Comcast owns DreamWorks, owns whatever.
I thought that was just targeted marketing towards me.
No, no. How to Train Your Dragon was all over the telecast. It's like one of the three things I remember most vividly about this broadcast. So I was very happy to hear that voicemail. I don't have anything else to add. We can move on. I just wanted to air that.
It always sounds sexual to me.
How to Train Your Dragon? That's scummy. Get your head out of the gutter.
You woke up from your nap to say that.
Yeah, get your head out of the gutter.
You're not allowed to see Freddy anymore.
All right, let's move on.
Golf Channel stuff. Why do I have to watch a Live Under Par commercial every commercial segment?
There's a lot of like, hey, you're watching golf. Here's a commercial for golf.
Yeah, like players, Live Under Par, or some other nebulous PGA Tour commercial.
It's
like, hey, cool.
Inventory?
We could probably cut down on 4 minutes of, you know, like 4 minutes every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Of these commercials, just from,
or use those commercials to tell, like, we lament a lot about like, hey, if you do all this great charity work, like, you don't do a great job of telling that story. Yeah. Like, let's, I don't know, use that time to tell the story of the tournament that you're watching or something like that.
But, like, the last thing you need to do...
You've made the sale to everybody.
You made the sale. This. Like, yeah. You don't need to sell us on living under par. Like, we're not the ones that are trying to live under par. The ones that are trying to live under par are the ones that aren't watching golf yet, guys.
Right. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that one. All right, next question.
Hi, this is Philip Johnson in Belfast, Northern Ireland, by way of Colgate, Wisconsin. This is completely irrelevant to the WGC Mexico, but I need to know if I'm the only one that has no idea why Tour is capitalized in all caps after PGA Tour. Why is Tour capitalized? Does it stand for anything? Am I the only one? Thank you.
You are not the only
one. You're not the only one. And this is for anyone who thinks, like, you know, hey, you just bag on the Tour all the time. This is the questions people have. Why is Tour all caps? I feel like I can shed some light on this as a former employee. It's just a brand standard. It's like whenever our name appears in any kind of print, it will be
our name.
Whenever,
wow.
No, well, I'm,
what a
I'm
slip
speaking,
up.
It is because it is.
It is because it is. That's exactly right. Yeah, whenever it's just them saying.
It's like when your parents say, like, it's because we say so.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Not quite. I did some research.
Okay.
Shout out Golf News Network. It's because the PGA Tour's founding company is PGA Tour Inc.
Yeah.
All of it capitalized.
Which is so capitalized because of the brand standard. Like it's not.
Sure.
So to the listener's question, it's not an all cap. It's not like an acronym, which would make more sense. Like,
however,
PGA is an acronym.
Correct.
PGA Tour is
correct.
Not an acronym.
For whatever reason, they decided to capitalize the whole name of the company.
Yeah.
And since then, they've, you know, it's accepted now to capitalize everything.
I think it's just because it sticks out more when you're reading it in a press release or you're reading it in whatever. I don't know. Whatever.
I would challenge the listeners, come up with your own acronym.
It should be an acronym.
What does Tour stand for?
Yeah,
if they're going to capitalize it, I think that's a question. Also, players is capitalized every single time as well.
The players.
Can we do some sort of contest?
If
with
you
that?
Really
and
want
the
to
tour
get,
chamber. Well, because they're all under the same
the
umbrella.
The players is all caps because of the brand standard. The Northern Trust is all caps because of the brand
standard. Is the players the gold standard because it's a brand standard?
I think brand standard is just a ubiquitous term.
Okay.
I think gold standard because of the gold.
Solly, can we do a contest?
I'm sure we can. Let's assume that you can. Reply with your best your best acronym for any of the ones that we just came up with.
We'll send you some cool shit.
The best one will win something.
We'll probably send you a Callaway driver of some kind.
Yeah.
Probably an Epic Flash.
All right, next question. Huge aside.
Sweet Jimmy calling in from Knoxville, Tennessee. If we're talking about anything other than Big Cat winning number 15. I don't know what the fuck we're doing.
No,
all right,
right.
Sweet Jimmy.
This is a children's show.
For the record, Jimmy, I agree.
Sweet Jimmy.
Sweet Jimmy
to you.
It might be the only thing that matters.
Can we listen real quick again to the despondency at the beginning of this call?
Sweet Jimmy calling in from Knoxville, Tennessee.
This is what we're encouraging, by the way.
Huge fan of Sweet Jimmy and your whole aesthetic.
Keep it short, tight.
Look, we're not going to talk about him winning number 15 until the season of championships starts here in March. That was a player's joke. I guess. Whatever.
So I don't know. I feel a little bit sheepish here. Can we talk about Masters picks?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
I got Tiger, Spieth, Leash,
Well, you can't pick. There's only 90 guys in the field. You can't pick a quarter.
I want five guys. I want five guys.
No, that's not impressive. You pick one guy.
Is that a pick
from like the top
10
favorites?
I like Cam Smith.
I like Fleetwood. I like Fred Couples.
I like Cat. I like Cat.
DJ, of course.
Bottom line, if I have to pick somebody, and I imagine that the odds are going to suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be like 8-1.
He's 12-1 right now.
I might lock that in because I think Cat's going
to
win.
I'm waiting for speed odds to keep going up.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, I don't know. It's hard to pick against Rory right now, right?
Don't spoil the Masters preview pod.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. Let's. Well, you guys got to.
I'm sorry, guys.
We pulled our pants down. You guys got to. You guys.
How can you talk about the Masters before the Players has even started?
Exactly.
The Masters Championship. It's the season of championships. All right, let's move on.
Let's go.
Okay, my name is Tucker. I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee. I was originally from Philadelphia.
That's
irrelevant detail. My rant is, what is the point of whistling? Why would you ever whistle? Like, are you fake singing the song? Are you faking having rhythm? I don't understand why you would ever, ever whistle.
I'm lost.
And it really pisses me off. So that's pretty much it. Thank you. Love you guys.
Not golf specific there.
I keep waiting for a golf aspect, but I think he just doesn't like whistling.
That's amazing.
Which, as someone who can't really whistle, I guess I sort of...
I've never understood it, but I think it's because I've never been able to.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bub Rub and Little Sis.
Well, I'll never whistle again, I don't think, after hearing that, because now I don't know why you would ever whistle.
That I don't know. Sense. Is that something that people are upset about typically?
I don't know how to whistle.
I can hear the anger and the frustration in his voice enough that to at least understand his struggle.
Can any of you whistle?
Mm-mm.
I don't know why you would, but I can whistle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to whistle.
I got game.
I wish I had that loud whistle where you stick two fingers in your mouth.
Same. RC Kunk's got that.
That's a little look at me.
I feel like if you whistle should have hard candy in your pocket and you should go around, you know.
You were
popping it in every now and again.
Yeah. I can't remember what we were talking about earlier where Freddie's not allowed to talk to Randy anymore. This is just another reason. Like, Randy, do you have an ice cream truck out in the garage?
I could see in a non-scummy way, the big guy's got a huge propensity for visiting college campuses. I could see you walking around whistling. Would very much fit your aesthetic. But if you can't whistle, I guess that's a whole other thing. All right. Very extremely weird question from Tucker, but we encourage the weird question. It was a rant.
That was my favorite one.
Yeah, we like that. Okay, next one.
Hey, guys. It's Dan from McQuanago. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Steve Stricker's Ryder Cup captaincy bid. I know nothing a Wisconsinite loves more than seeing another Wisconsinite succeed, but I just wanted to see if this is a slippery slope, you know, just picking hometown boys to be captains, or what's your general thoughts on it? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Best accent of the callers, I would say.
A lot of northern people.
I'm not sure where he's from.
Very, very pent up a little bit.
That almost seems like, gosh, that's like north of Wisconsin. It almost seems like northern Minnesota or something.
We had to listen back. Like, is he playing a role here?
Very real. I don't know. Steve Stricker captaincy. I think he's earned it. God, he was...
Micro sense, I love it.
Yeah.
Macro sense, I hate it.
Why?
Because I think it sets a crazy standard. Like, all right, who's going to be the captain in New York? Is it Mark Ternessa?
It's gonna be Phil.
Well, it's gonna be Phil. Yeah,
but Phil's not from New York.
He's gonna be Lisa Pavin.
She's an alpha. I appreciate that. Listen, you guys are on the U.S. side. We can. The European side has been dealing with this for a decade now.
Sure.
Paul McGinley never won a major. You know, this is the slippery slope that you're talking about, and Europe's been beating.
What you're talking about.
I've
beaten y'all's asses. So.
I never understood the winning a major thing mattering for captaincy.
I agree.
We can debate. We have debated a bunch. We're going to do a lot more Ryder Cup stuff here in the coming years.
A lot more.
I don't know. Either you're a good captain or you're not, and a lot of circumstances are out of your hands. Like, I don't know if Jim Furyk was a bad captain because Patrick Reed went, AWOL in the Ryder Cup. But Jim Furyk's won a major and they didn't win the Ryder Cup. I don't know. I don't think it really matters if you won a major.
No,
I know it's different than the question that's being asked. I mean, I don't think it matters that much who the captain is. If you're willing to put in the work and have a leadership style and make sound decisions, that's really all that you can really ask for in a captain.
How do people know that somebody who hasn't won a major is a bad captain if they haven't had somebody who hasn't won a major?
True. Very true.
It's true. I could see, I could kind of get behind if the PGA of America was like, hey, we want to limit this to only PGA Championship winners because it's our event and we can do whatever we want. I'd be like, all right, that seems stupid, but at least I kind of get it. But just the random kind of nebulous must have won a major thing, like, yeah, that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
So Stricker, like, I don't know, I think it'd be cool. I think fans are going to be mega passionate behind him. I don't think the captain plays that big of a role to begin with in the first place, and so I think it's more of a figurehead sort of thing anyways. And I think as the American team has been much more, hey, we want like a quote-unquote player's captain, and we want, you know, Phil's going to run the team anyways. It doesn't really matter. So
it's just disgusting.
I guess. But I think Stricker fits the mold well. I'm all for it.
I actually like the idea of that guy on Twitter. Who was it? Who was like, why don't they name Bill Belichick or...
Somebody that was a thermonuclear take.
Some of the great, I believe he was saying, like, some of the great leaders are, yeah, Robert Kraft, right?
Some of the great leaders of our time.
Rice.
Yeah.
In other aspects. Yeah, like, why does he even have to be a golf person?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I mean, I guess what the captaincies too is where the counter argument to that is, where do you draw the line? And it's like, common sense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The people that are involved here have common sense, and like, I have no concerns that Jerry Kelly is going to be a Ryder Cup captain the next time it comes around, and, you know, like that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think Stricker's going to either be a good or bad captain, but we don't have no one outside of maybe the people directly involved in the process have any information that would clue us into whether that would be the case.
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, but I would say even the people involved in the decision probably don't have any idea.
Maybe slightly more.
Bottom line, more Lisa Pavin.
Yes. Do we want to get to some shout-outs here before we wrap up? I was going to give a shout-out to Kira Deck, Api Bonrat, finishing T3, first full season of the PGA Tour. Moved up to, I think, 36th in the official World Golf Rankings. We're going to be seeing a lot more of him around the PGA Tour this year. I think that's exciting.
I'll give a shout-out to Uncle Joost Luyten. Psyched to see him. Someone said he looked like a really grungy solid, which is the take of the week on Twitter. Could not stop seeing it. And so the more we see that guy on the TV, the better.
Solid accused the picture of being photoshopped with his eyes.
It's like my eyes. It's like, it's creepy how much that one picture looks exactly like me. I think there was a little bit of Photoshop in that.
No, I actually Googled it, and that was...
That's his photo?
That's his photo.
Okay, maybe we are long-lost cousins.
I want to give a shout-out to the Orchid Spa in Jupiter.
Sure.
I don't know, I think it's going to be an interesting week. Heard a couple of pro golfers they were out of town during the whole Sting thing, so they're in good shape, but I heard a Hall of Fame basketball player might be in the mix.
We'll see.
It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be fun to watch.
More on that story as it develops.
I'll give a shout out to Martin Trainer for winning the Puerto Rico Open.
That's his
first career PGA Tour victory.
That's a very functional shout out.
Yeah,
he's got a wild resume.
His grandfather is Eli Whitney.
Great grandfather.
Are they cotton gin guy?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Justin Ray's got that? Every stat.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. On that note, I think we're going to wrap it. Longer one, but this was a fun week, and we're going to get fired up here again for the Florida Swing, which somebody outside is very fired up about it. We're going to wrap it there.
That sounded like South Florida right there. Yeah. God, that was a shout out to the Honda Classic.
That kicks off the Florida Swing. Exactly. Here we go. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
The right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect anything.